Hello and welcome back to the Chris Yeh podcast. I am, as always, Chris Yeh. And sadly, for the final time this Mental Samurai season, I am joined by my partner in crime, Dr. Ken Franklin, to analyze and recap an episode of the show. This is the season finale, episode 9 of season 2. Dr. Ken, we're going to have to find some excuse to broadcast without the show on, because otherwise I'm going to miss you.
Well, our friendship is uneliminatable, okay? It cannot be taken away by Ava or any other force of nature, but we'll have to find other ways to interact.
Maybe we'll have some sort of excuse.
Maybe you can fly to Kalamazoo for KenCon in October and we can play some board games.
Oh, you have KenCon. I didn't know that.
My bride, about 4 years ago, asked me what I wanted to do for my birthday. And I said, I'd love to have a mini game convention. And so she made it happen. And so what we do on my birthday weekend is we invite people to come, and they get lanyards, and they get the opportunity to get little ribbons with silly phrases on them. And the entry fee is a bag of non-perishable groceries, which is donated to local food bank. And then we spend the entire day in snacking and enjoying board games. We've had as many as 50 people.
First of all, it is such a very Dr. Ken thing to do, to have your very own birthday convention. That's phenomenal. And the cherry on top, so to speak, is the fact that you're using it to raise food for needy people. Only you, Dr. Ken, could be so good.
Oh, I disagree. I know several people who are more giving than I am, but I enjoy being part of them.
Well, I'm glad that you still get to spend time with your friend Mother Teresa, but I'm going to stick with you, Dr. Ken, as my most generous friend.
She doesn't play a lot of games anymore, by the way. She's a little busy being in heaven. Of course, I got to believe if there's going to be joy in heaven, there have to be board games in heaven.
Absolutely.
And brownies. There have to be brownies in heaven.
I guarantee you there are board games in heaven. There absolutely have to be. Because again, heaven should be about all the things that bring us joy. And yes, there are a lot of things that bring us joy far more than wearing robes and playing harps.
That's right. I don't think there are going to be many robes and harps unless you're into that, you know. But...
Well, you know, hopefully they'll have their own Ava set up for everyone who really wants to get back in the chair and prove what they've got.
Well, there's no fear in heaven, so it'll only be fun, because everybody will figure out that gravity is optional.
Well, speaking of heaven and gods and various folks, we have first up in this episode a Greek demigod by the name of Hercules Magnus.
Yeah, a military history and a polo and soccer player who was originally from Sao Paulo and now works as retired from the military, now in real estate, which is an amazing backstory.
Yes, well, it's a fascinating thing to picture. And the fact was, he definitely had that Hercules feel, and you could see the mm-hmm. biceps, he had the guns going. So very good look.
Oh, yeah. And he was, you know, it was funny. He had very good English, no accent when he was communicating with Rob. But once the race started, he got right back into his Brazilian accent right away.
Now, this was one of the most animated contestants of the season, although we'll have another contender later on in this show. Mm-hmm. I described his approach as being almost like an anime hero, you know, in those Japanese anime when the hero's like, rocket punch, power boots, or what have you. He would come into each station. He's like, sequence or yes, memory, and call out his attack.
Yeah, I noticed that several times over the course of this episode, which I think is cool. And it's good for focusing your brain, too.
Absolutely. Trying to signal this is what we're going to focus on. Very vocal, great attitude, very confident, very talking it out. But unfortunately, didn't get that far. So what happened?
Well, first of all, he paused on the first one, and it's almost a guess. He paused again on his first sequence, was very slow on that, which is a surprise. But then, let's see, he wanted to know whether slate was a kind of rock or a kind of scissors. And apparently, he had no concept of the word slate because he guessed scissors and fail immediately, which
Yeah,
was very
apparently
frustrating.
not a lot of slate quarries in Brazil, I guess, because, certainly you and I knew about slate, and maybe it came from the Flintstones as well. I'm trying to think. I don't know.
It's a rock, but again, we've both described many time, and I have personal experience with, you can have a block on any word at any time.
Absolutely. And we will see this come up multiple times in today's
Yes.
episode.
I wonder once again if, even though there's some great runs, this is the last episode of the season. Everybody knows that the season's wrapping up, the taping's wrapping up. And I'm wondering if a little fatigue crept in there.
Oh, absolutely. I think that people were tired, and we saw a couple of things that happened along the way where people really were acting in a way that indicated that they were really uncertain, feeling punch drunk. And we'll come to
Right.
that as well.
Sure.
Hercules, as you know, one of the things I like to do in our analysis is to also see what kinds of stuff that Hercules has been on, because he might have been a ringer. And in fact, Hercules Magnus, which apparently is his real name, does in fact have a bachelor's degree in acting from UCLA and has five acting credits at IMDb. Not huge ones, but he's actually appeared in three different feature-length films. They're not big studio films, but nonetheless, he appeared in a film called Price for Freedom about Iran, in which Paul Sorvino played the Shah of Iran. He appeared in a movie called Summerland, which was, I believe, about an amusement park or something like that. And then he, summer camp. And then he appeared in something called Happy Horror Days, which was a holiday themed horror anthology with Christmas and Hanukkah and other holidays like that. So Hercules, another example of one of the people who has, in addition to his regular career, a bit of acting on the side, and where, there were no productions going on during the pandemic. So Mental Samurai was his chance to be on stage.
Right. Well, I just think that's fascinating. Again, you got a military career and real estate and working in acting. I'm betting he went for that acting degree after his military time.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And also just thought, this very great positive attitude, great energy. I got a good feel from him, good vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun to watch him. I can just tell you in ROTC, I never knew of a cadet who went for a bachelor's degree in acting. I'm just.
Something that happens after they serve, it seems.
Right.
Because, of course, there are many examples of veterans who became actors. A great actor who is currently active right now, the very great Adam Driver, who's been in many, many different films, including, of course, the
Absolutely.
Star Wars movies. As a
Right.
former U.S. Marine, discharged after injuries prevented him from serving, and, of course, is now an incredible actor.
Absolutely.
So our second contestant was Caroline Glimpf, a baton twirling PhD student. Went ahead and looked her up. She is currently pursuing a PhD from the Chicago School of Practical Psychology. She also has a bachelor's in criminology. So, hence her statement later on the show about, helping criminals.
Well, not only that, but she wore her psychology on her sleeve. It was clear that she came with a mind game, and we'll go over that more as we go through.
Absolutely. So as she went through her run, there were a couple of notes I had to myself. The first is that she was in the talk it out school, but still going at a really good pace. So she was balanced in that sense. Some of
I
the
agree.
questions, I noticed, as one of the litmus tests I apply to contestants is gridlock. And do they get the answers? But most importantly, do they get the answers in the right order,
Yeah.
indicating that they took a systematic approach? And she did get them in the right order.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
She also really showed a strong general knowledge in things like pop culture. When you, for example, we popped up the Super Bowl celebrities, I think it was Christina Aguilera, Shakira, and J-Lo, and she knew
Right.
instantly that Christina Aguilera was the one who had not performed at the Super Bowl, which is not something you normally expect a PhD student to know, but she knew it instantly.
But again, as I now, repeat in my nightmares, pop culture is an important ingredient to be successful in this show.
Now, she did say on one of the memory questions that I'm just guessing. She got it correct, but she said, I'm
Right.
just guessing. I don't know to what extent that was part of the mind game. What do you think, Ken?
I don't think that was a mind game. I think the one that she guessed was essentially she knew the other two were wrong, and it was just it was on the first line all the way to the right, and it was easy to overlook. But again, she went about it in an organized fashion, so I think she came by it honestly.
So she was blazing her way through the course, and she gets to question 10 after just over 3 minutes, which is a very good pace. And that's when she actually stalled out because the question was a sequence question. It was a question of which race was the longest from least to greatest in length. And the three choices were the Iditarod, the Boston Marathon, and the Tour de France. And she did not know what the Iditarod was.
Right, but at least she was decisive about it. She wasn't going to take a lot of time. She was conscious of the clock and she knew she had a fast run. So, if I don't know it, I'm not going to use up 2 minutes of the clock. So she put it where she thought it was, put it in, locked it in, which is the right strategy.
Absolutely. I thought she was an extremely strong competitor. And
Yes.
I was just a bit surprised, given her knowledge, which she demonstrated throughout, that she had not heard of the Iditarod, which just goes to show you, even the strongest player, even a Dr. Ken Franklin, can have a hole in their knowledge somewhere.
Yes, let's talk about good players, Mr. Mental Samurai.
Well, again, we'll talk about this later on. There was an interesting thing that I'll observe about one of the other contestants in terms of thinking that they did a good job of not going quickly. So we'll get to that in a bit.
Right. Now, again, but we're talking about the mental game. She was putting on the yeah, right face. When Hercules said, you're not going to beat me. And she said, yeah, right. And then, she, was a little flippant toward him after she did it, got in the chair and said, okay, come at me. And it was in her affect, it was in her body language. I cannot believe that was unconscious.
No, I think that that was conscious. And again, the mental game is if you can intimidate the folks, then, A, you might get them to trip up, but B, most importantly, you might get them to rush and you might cause them to rush through something. And she already, because of the fact she had a fast run, meant that there was a lot of pressure. It was going to be difficult for someone to get through 9 questions faster than she did, which meant
Right.
there was tremendous pressure to get all 10 correct.
That's right.
Now, next up to the gate was Anya Lester. Now, I had originally on my notes Anna Lester. What did you have in your notes?
It's Anya, Anya.
Okay, Anya Lester, a
Right.
forensic scientist from Las Vegas. And in fact, I went and looked for her online, and there was a picture of her from one of the publications, one of the newspapers in Las Vegas, of her holding a gun, getting ready to fire it into a fish tank for one of her forensic tests.
Yeah, she was poor mouthing what she does, but certainly nothing is as glamorous as it would be portrayed on television. But still, what she does is very important.
Yeah. Now, by the way, I remember what I said before that Hercules was very animated. I think that Anya wins the award for the single most animated and excited and constantly moving contestant I have ever seen on the show.
Absolutely. She was enjoying it. She was along for the ride no matter what happened.
And she was blowing a kiss to Rob. She was excited the whole way. She counted down 3, 2, 1, getting ready to go
With the fingers
with
out,
Ava.
too, yeah.
Exactly. Which again, I'm like, whoa. And during the time she was going, she was so excited. This was the thing that I noticed. She was literally churning her feet like she was treading water
Yeah.
almost the entire time, as if she couldn't contain herself.
Yeah, I don't know if that was her personality or cappuccino, but it was certainly good television.
I don't know about cappuccino. It feels like that goes all the way to Provigil or crystal meth or something. I mean, it was so energetic.
Well, I don't think I'd go quite that far.
Probably not. They'd probably be difficult to smuggle those things in. But in addition to her feet, she was moving her arms the whole time. I saw her doing the Arsenio arm rotation, quite a bit. And she also was doing raise the roof at various points in time. So it was just an incredible performance.
Yeah, and I noticed this her run clearly showed that the stacks of questions for Ava were clearly set in a group of three or four that were very easy, and then two that were medium, and then the last three or four significantly harder. I mean, the first question with the mirrored alphabet soup, the three pictures put out different phrases.
Yeah.
That was a 3 second question, but and she enjoyed it. She sang the answers to one of the questions, the one about the twins versus the triplets, gave out a victory kick after some of her answers. I was impressed.
Yeah. By the way, one of the things I notice, and again, it gets back to the mental game, is they would sometimes cut back to Caroline, who had a very different approach to things, and she had a look on her face, just like, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah, well, and again, it was mixed with the carefully calculated disdain. You silly person, you think you can beat me? I don't know how much of that was poker face.
Right. And Anya was going at a slower pace than Caroline. I mean, it would be difficult to go at that same pace. So she was a bit slower. She needed to get all 10. And she stalled out after six. She missed question seven. And this is, again, a classic case of a hole in the knowledge. Now, I am a big basketball fan. I've played basketball for much of my life. I watched basketball on television. I instantly knew which one was a basketball. You probably did too, Ken.
Oh, well, I've played the worst basketball in the human race. I actually had one shot on basket in intramural basketball, and I was at the wrong end of the court. Thank God I missed. But I knew which one was the correctly shaped basketball. Yes.
And yet, obviously, Anya, either because of getting punched drunk or because she just had literally never touched a basketball in her life, which is possible for someone who's very studious,
Right.
it just did not know the answer.
That's right.
And, she had a great attitude. She was so excited and everything like that. And she was obviously disappointed, but still very positive. And then my other biographical notes on Anya is that she has recently left, since taping the show, she's left her job as a forensic scientist because in 2021, she finished law school. And so she has now embarked on a legal career.
Okay, I wonder if she's ever going to ask Caroline to be one of her expert witnesses in the future.
Well,
I'm
you
guessing
never know.
not.
Probably not, but you never know, right? Again,
Right.
it's all a question of what kind of expert you need. But the
Right.
problem is with the expert witnesses, as you know, it's important for the expert witness to be likable. They need to have the qualifications, but the jury has to like the expert witness as well. Otherwise, they're not going to listen.
Right. And well, again, Carolyn has had shown a very good mastery of faces. Maybe she'd make herself look likable, but she didn't want to make herself look likable in this show.
As they like to say on some of these programs, I think like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, I'm not here to make friends.
That's right. She was there to make some money.
And again, with so far the results were good. Now, next up was Jeremy Robert. Jeremy
Right.
Robert is a Navy cryptologist. We'll talk more about what I learned about him in my research later on. And very sort of low key. Right, not excited. It's huge contrast to Anya, who came right before him.
That's right. And that's okay. I mean, not everybody can have the same personality, and you want the interest to it. But I thought it was interesting that he was being very serious about maintaining his security clearance as he was talking with Rob.
Well, I think that, part of it is part of the character work, and we'll talk about that later on. But part of it is, I think it's just his basic personality. I mean, he
Right.
was very low key. He was not, it was an interesting paradox. He was not a talk it out guy. There were many of these questions where he just sort of sat there thinking silently
Right.
and then gave the answer. But at the same time, he wasn't particularly fast either. So it
No.
was sort of the worst of both worlds for the producers.
Yeah, and again, Carolyn was trying to talk him down, and she had her psych face on for him as well. And I think he was trying to match her poker face for poker face as he was going through it.
Yeah. Now he went through. I have a couple of notes about questions. I mean, early on, it was clear that he was not a Kanye West celebrity culture kind of guy because
Right.
it took him a little while to get that question right. Of course, everyone knows that Kanye does, in fact, have a child named Northwest, but no Southwest and no South by Southwest, certainly.
Right. Well, the South by Southwest is going to be the clue that nobody's going to name their kid three words.
You never know. I mean, Elon Musk named his child an unpronounceable symbol, so
Well,
one
but it was
never
one
knows.
word of
Fair
unpronounceable.
enough. Fair enough. And then, of course, print. Well, we'll talk about people and their unpronounceable names later on. But then the other thing was he did manage to really get through the course, and he got all the way to question 10. He knew going through that there was no way he was necessarily going to catch Anya on, sorry, catch Caroline on time.
That's right.
So he was taking his time. I was a little worried about time, but he managed to get there, get to the end, and he had plenty of time, but
Right.
he had a, I think, difficult question. Now it seemed like Carolyn felt like she knew it right away, but this was one where I actually struggled as well, despite my knowledge of the actual answer.
Right. Well, yeah. I was able to come up with it, but my wife Debbie actually beat me to it. She was trying to figure out what word the goat meant.
Right.
But Debbie saw the eyelash and immediately burst out. So she beat me on time by a good 20 seconds. And he had enough time that if he'd have talked through it a little more, I think he would have gotten it. But I believe at the end, Caroline said that she didn't know the answer when he ran
Yes,
out of it.
that's true. Now, I actually went down the wrong road with this one. And again, that's one of the things we do in this broadcast. We admit if we might have gotten it wrong. I actually went down the road of thinking it was the artist whose name is spelled Gotye, because I have never actually heard that name pronounced out loud. And so I thought it could very well be Gotye.
Okay.
It is not, it is Gotye,
Okay.
just
And
for future reference.
but absolutely. But again, I have never heard of Gotye, to be honest with you.
Well,
But
you probably have heard of his most famous song, which is Somebody That You Used to Know.
oh yes, absolutely.
You've definitely heard the song. But, again, the artist's name is Gotye, which I thought might be good, which I thought was perhaps pronounced Godai. And so I would have made the wrong guess relatively early on because it was a plausible answer. He is a Grammy Award-winning artist.
Right.
So Jeremy went through again, Navy cryptologist. I went through and looked up some more information about him, found out a couple of things. First of all, in addition, he was a Navy cryptologist, but he left service back around the turn of the century, turn of the 21st century, that is, not the turn of the 20th century. He didn't sail the Great White Fleet. And since then, he's been a photographer and filmmaker. So he is actually a photographer. He has three IMDb credits that are behind the camera credits, where he was a still photographer or director of photography working on these various projects. And so, again, somebody with experience in the industry who was like, well, there's no productions going on right now, so why not?
I would love to know from Mr. Aploff whether this was a conscious decision to get people, because I don't recall being there having that many of our colleagues in the first season who had any show business experience.
It's not nearly as many because I did, in fact, as you know, podcast about the first season and talk about the various contestants. And I did my usual research, and there were folks who did have IMDb credits, like Ben Bergstrom, who's we as we know is an actor.
Right.
And but for the most part, it was not. It felt like we had more. Season one, we had more of an emphasis on sort of Mensa game show circuit types. And then
Right.
season two, there was more of an emphasis on some of the bigger personalities. And, part of that may be it's just one of the ways that you make the show work.
Right, absolutely. Well, I think what for the emphasis for season three needs to be for people who've done extensive research on how to play the game.
I think that's a great idea. They need experts, people who've analyzed the game in depth, who have been working very hard on how to actually excel. And I think that, having those perhaps former competitors or other people who really understand that
Yeah,
come
that's a
on would be
great
great.
idea.
I
Maybe
think
we
that's
should.
fantastic.
I think, yeah, we put in a word for that. I think former competitors would be a real good choice. Yeah.
So speaking of competitors, next up, Caroline had survived Jeremy's run because even though he got nine, he got it in a slower time. Next up came Joshua Florence. Now, again, we like to mark people who are either very mature or very young. And Joshua was very young. He was a 22-year-old undergraduate student. And he
Yeah,
was so.
and pre-med and partier.
Yes. And he was so young that he relayed that his mom wanted him to tell Rob that she really loved him in St. Elmo's Fire, which she watched when she was a little girl. Not sure if that
Man.
was something Rob was like happy about or not. I don't
Well,
know.
he took it in stride. It didn't take him aback. He says, "Thank you for making me feel old, young man." That would have been a natural response, but he's a cool and suave man, so.
Yes. And again, he called himself the life of the party, the octopus, because he was doing so many things, felt like he would be able to make it through. And this was a case where, like me, he was not a fan of the movement. It was clearly bothering him some. And
Right.
this is why I felt like the fact that he was taking things slow was actually acceptable, because
Right.
he knew that he was not a speed demon. He was not going to beat Caroline on time, no matter what he did. And so he was better off working his own pace, recovering from the movements, doing whatever it took to get the answers right. Because if he could get 10, didn't matter how slow it was, he would take over as reigning samurai.
Yeah, he was clearly comfortable with a more relaxed pace because I think he figured out that his pace was still plenty enough to get all 10 in 5 minutes. And as we got through the last four questions, he realized that he had time and he was in good shape. And you could see his confidence grow as he got to there. He was, I noticed he had a hiccup on the English muffin question because the first word was an anagram instead of just a scrambled word, and that kind of stuck in his brain a little bit. But again, 5 seconds and he was on through it. He was very careful on the alphabetical sequence on number six. I was amazed that it took him as long as it did for hip hop. There was
Yes.
again some of the rules that I had been analyzing for what to expect in a question were violated in the last four questions.
Yes.
They had
Talk about that.
three memory items in a row, and you had to on all times when you had three in a row, you only had to repeat four. This one had five.
Five
That
item
should.
echo chamber. I noticed that. I was like, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, and then he got over to gridlock, and for the first time in the season, instead of three, which tripped me up as well, he had to have four answers. And
Yes.
you could see it in his face. He was certain he had it. He had 40 seconds. He gave out three answers. Oh, lock it in. Boop. Oh my goodness. And then he looked at the question and it required four.
And that is the thing about the game. You have to read the instructions, and because of the fact that you cannot make up for a mistake, you always have to get the answer right. You got to take the time to look at the instructions. And if he had read the instructions out loud and read it one more time, four, he had plenty of time. It didn't matter when he finished. then he probably would have gotten it because he clearly went through gridlock the correct way. He just stopped after three.
That's right. You know, he was very intelligent and a worthy challenger to Carolyn. He just choked on the last putt, and he only had a one footer, and he missed. And it was really heartbreaking.
And Rob even mentioned, he's like, I would have been betting on Joshua. I really felt like he was going to go all the way. And the other thing I would say is, I highlighted at the beginning, it's like, hey, given his age, will he be able to understand everything? Will there be something that comes up? He didn't have any questions that he faced that required geezer knowledge.
No. Yes, you are correct. He didn't need any geezer knowledge.
That's a separate official category, geezer knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Excuse me. I got to shift in my chair. My rheumatiz is acting up over here. All right. Let's go ahead with the podcast.
And we'll get to some not quite geezer knowledge, but mature knowledge coming up with the next run, because back from the previous day was the previous day's champion, Laith. And Laith, again, as we discussed last time, incredible competitor, hugely entertaining. And it was
And
funny.
immune to psych out. You know,
Exactly.
Carolyn's powers weren't going to work on him.
No, this is a very mentally tough guy, a former professional athlete, a high-level collegiate athlete, somebody who's worked in the industry. We discussed before his many IMDb credits. And again, he had a great story. Now, as we all know, this episode was probably shot at most the day after his previous episode. But Rob asked him, what have you been doing? He's like, oh, I locked myself in. I studied an encyclopedia, right? He's got
Yeah,
a good story.
there is no way in Portugal that he went over and locked himself in an English language library.
But he knew how to give a good narrative on the show. And so he
Right.
was ready for that. And away he went. There were a couple things. One comment, the first memory question they dealt with, which had a series of colored, I think, yes, tennis balls, was it?
Yes. Yes, they were tennis balls, and they were arranged in rainbow, Roy G.
Correct.
Biv. Those again, but it was one of the first four questions, so you would expect something a little easier. And that was the easiest memory question of the season, as far as I can
I
remember.
completely agree. I looked at that and I was like, wow, I'm surprised that they made that question that easy. And then, of course, there were some other good stuff along. He did another voice. He said, hello, Clarice, which,
Yes.
again, love the showmanship.
Right. And here's a point, from our experience, as you know, all the contestants have had it explained to them that the sets of 12 questions, or in this case, 10 questions, are all set in stacks, and they're all written and checked by the network fairness and honesty folks before any contestant shows up. So once those are happen, one stack is preloaded and you'd never get a, so that Roy G. Biv question could have come up on the second contestant in the first episode, but it just happened to be one of the ones left over on the last regular round of the season.
Absolutely. Now, he did struggle a little bit on one of the rebuses, which again, Caroline was looking at it like, oh my God, this is so easy. And it took him a little bit of time,
Geezer knowledge.
but he got it. Geezer knowledge. It's an
Yeah.
old saying, the bee's knees.
Yep. And once he got it, he was disgusted. But it again, you once you trip, it's hard to get back up. So he lost a little time on that.
And I could tell, I think that he went in planning on beating her on time and going all the way. And the fact that he was slowed down by a few things like the bee's knees, and then later, when he was trying to identify the missing piece, he was slower than I would have expected him to be. I think he was thrown off a bit.
I agree. Yeah, again, I think once you show your weakness and you're trying to put this infallible face on, that can backfire on you.
Well, and that's what eventually happened. On question eight, it backfired. And this was a piece of knowledge, which not geezer knowledge, but also not super young person knowledge. And the question was, What is the or can you name the or these television shows, these competition shows, in the order in which they
Yes.
premiered? And the three shows in question were RuPaul's Drag Race, Hell's Kitchen, and The Masked Singer.
Right.
Now, it's a pop cultural question. A Masked Singer obviously is the most recent, but then it
Right.
became a question, okay, Hell's Kitchen versus RuPaul's Drag Race. And Laith was like,
I struggled with that one.
Laith is like, I've never seen, I have no idea what RuPaul's Drag Race is.
Right.
And so with this one, I wasn't completely certain, but I did go with Hell's Kitchen,
Right.
then RuPaul's Drag Race, and then The Masked Singer, simply because Hell's Kitchen has been around long enough to spin off multiple spin-offs.
Right.
And so I was like, I feel like this one's probably been around long enough. I remember it being something that was paired with The Apprentice, which has been off the air for a long time.
Well, and also you have to remember that we have gone through an amazing and I think positive cultural shift in the last 10 years. RuPaul's Drag Race would not have been a successful show 20 years ago. But, within the last decade, the comfort level, the interest, the acceptance has gone way up. Along the same lines, as we're taping this, we're in the middle of watching the Olympics, and commentators are absolutely comfortable talking about the husband of a male competitor or the wife of a female competitor. And I find that so wonderful. But it's something that absolutely wouldn't have happened 10 years ago.
And it's still something which is very much, sort of sport dependent. It was only in the past month or two that an active NFL player came out of the closet. One of the players for the Las Vegas Raiders actually came out of
Exactly.
the closet. Very prominent player, well paid, very high
Right.
performer.
Right.
And it was something which was news because the NFL has not had that typically, but certainly many other sports have.
But it was also news for about 6 hours,
That's true. And by the
which
way,
is a sign of maturity, as a species, I think.
it's a beautiful thing. And let's not forget that our fellow season one competitor, the great Sam Durbin,
The
also known
amazing Brianna Banana,
exactly, would have gotten that question so
in
right, so
15
instantaneously.
milliseconds. Sam would have interrupted that question to block it in.
It's like, oh, absolutely, Hell's Kitchen, RuPaul's Drag Race, Masked Singer, lock it
That's right. That's right.
in. So that meant that Laith did not repeat as champion, and it meant that Caroline did actually make it all the way through with her 9 questions in 309. I'll note that this is the second time this season that's happened because the first time was last episode when Laith got through with 9 questions. That was the first time someone had not gotten all 10.
That's right. And again, I've got to believe there's a little fatigue factor that's creeping in there.
Exactly. So that sent Caroline, our head game player, to the Circle of Samurai. And again, she was, as we described, a very strong player. And what was interesting is she was, when she was going in, she was again clearly focused on time, even though she knew she had plenty of time given her previous pace.
Right.
And the first question, I think she waited for the read to go all the way through, but then she started answering questions before the read was completed.
Right. And yeah, because I think she had witnessed two or three people who had gotten tripped up and lost a lot of time. And she started realizing I have a full minute less than I did on my first run.
Now, then what happened after that was a couple of interesting things. So she knew she wasn't necessarily pinched for time. So on one of the questions, she literally counted off on her fingers. The question was, can you add the number of letters in the alphabet with the number of letters in the word alphabet, which is 26 plus 8, which is 34? And to be safe, I think she was feeling a little punch drunk. She literally counted off on her fingers, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31,
I
32,
still have a
33.
little pain in my neck from shaking my head at that one because I'm a math geek. That would have been a great opportunity to make up 10 seconds on the clock.
Absolutely. But again, the clock didn't matter at this point. So that's the thing to
Well,
remember.
it depends. Again, when you only have 4 minutes, if you get a delay or two, You need to have a reserve for that ninth and tenth question.
That's true. Margin of safety. And this is the issue. I guess they don't, I guess criminology and psychology are not necessarily math intensive subjects.
This is true. The CSI, it's a math intensive. So, if let's see,
Anya.
if Anya had been in there, she'd have had that in 5 seconds because you got to do math to do science, but
Absolutely.
definitely not one of Carolyn's strengths.
No. And then the other one that I was a little surprised on, again, before we get to the final surprise, that I was a little surprised on was how long it took her to get Father's Day. I think she was overthinking it. Again, punch drunk, tired at
Yep.
the end of the run.
Right, absolutely. Male parents is not hard. I agree. I think she just overthought it.
She was like, it can't be that easy. It can't be fathers. It's like
Right.
male parents day. Oh, Father's Day. I'm like,
Yeah.
wait, oh my God, how is this possible?
Well, and again, she's seen people crash from assuming.
Yes.
She saw Joshua crash on a gridlock. So when and she's on the seventh question here, she knows things are going to get tricky. So again, you start getting into your own head and getting in the way.
That's true. But you're right. The caution is actually very reasonable. But then she came to question number eight. And this particular question, it was simply a hole in knowledge. And I was, again, a little surprised because on our first run, her ability to instantly name the Super Bowl celebrity singers
Right.
was something where I'm like, okay, she obviously understands pop culture. But
Right.
then she had to identify and decide which of these folks had hosted the Oscars the least the most, Billy Crystal, Seth MacFarlane, and Whoopi Goldberg. And she said, well, I don't know who any of those people are. I'm like, oh my God.
And again, Billy Crystal's a geezer. I know geezers. That was pretty darn easy.
Exactly. You got Billy, you got Whoopi, and both of them, sort of does tend to move into Geezerville. And then with Seth MacFarlane, not nearly as famous as those other two. And he said, well, have you heard of Family Guy? She's like, oh, but she didn't know because obviously it's a cartoon. Like, how many people know that Dan Castellaneta voices Homer Simpson or Julie Kavner voices Marge Simpson? A lot of people don't.
Oh yeah. Well, if you're a geezer, you know that the Simpsons originated on the Tracy Ullman show, and Julie Kavner and Don Castellaneta were regulars on that show, and that's why they fell into the series. Because
Which
the first two episodes of the Simpsons had almost no lines except for Maggie, whose entire line was.
exactly. And again, just think about the how unlikely it is that if you were a performer on Tracy Ullman's sketch show that happening to voice these animated characters that were a small part of the show would end up becoming the job that would define your life.
Well, not only define your life, but guarantee your lifetime income. I mean, it's an institution, and a delightful one.
Well, not just the lifetime income, but guarantee the prosperity of your family line for generations to come.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. So she did not have that pop cultural knowledge. She named him almost exactly backwards because, of course, we all know from our geezer knowledge that Billy Crystal is the hostess with the mostest. And then Whoopi Goldberg had hosted multiple times, and Seth MacFarlane famously only did it once.
Right. And by the way, you have not yet received your geezer card, so don't be a little presumptuous, Mr. Yeh.
Call me an old soul. How about that?
Okay. All right, I'll let you have the old soul.
And then, by the way, a little side note on Seth MacFarlane. One of the reasons he was not asked back, ironically enough, is that he told a variety of jokes, including one joke that explicitly criticized and referenced Harvey Weinstein before all of his bad behavior, which was common knowledge but not talked about, was out there. So
Right.
Weinstein was not pleased that MacFarlane had done that and probably pulled a bunch of strings to get him out of it. But MacFarlane is one of the first people to publicly say something about Weinstein. So give him
Right.
credit for that.
Well, Seth is a very as a intellectually honest and brave person. So that's why Family Guy is such a cutting edge show. It's not afraid to offend people and going for the laugh.
I also do really enjoy the show that he has also created, The Orville, which is a love letter to Star Trek: The Next
Oh, yes,
Generation.
absolutely. An absolutely brilliant show. We could get off on our own podcast about the Orville, so.
Well, maybe that's what we'll have to do. We'll do some off-season podcasts about great elements of pop culture, or maybe we can theme it great elements of pop culture, great pieces of knowledge. Who knows? We'll come up with something.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, let's look back over the season. So, what are some of the patterns that you saw looking back on the season? What are the things that we've learned from watching this 9 episodes of Mental Samurai?
Well, I think that one of the things we learned, we've already talked about the fatigue factor. People were hitting 10 questions every show. The first few, and then as we got to the end, it became harder and harder. We saw more and more early flameouts. We also discovered that with people being inside of each other, as opposed to the first season when we weren't allowed to see each other's runs, they discovered early on that they could influence somebody's run while they were sitting in the chair. And as we went on, that became more and more prominent, which, again, good television, I think a good production choice. And again, I think we noticed some patterns in some of the question types we've talked about in the memory and in the gridlock, the puzzle pieces, which I think were interesting choices that the production crew was trying to make sure that the average score was in the 7, 8, 9 range. It's just, it's intellectually bludgeoning to see lots of people go out in 1, 2, or 3 questions.
Yeah, and we definitely saw more of that in season one. I do think they wanted to make sure that, and I think that part of it was also the gradual easing of people into the show, right? To having the earlier questions be easier as opposed to every one of the questions being roughly the same level of difficulty.
Right. And as you've mentioned, the emphasis on being animated and conversational and enjoying the ride certainly made a difference in the character of the show in the second season.
Which is ironic because I think that the element of adding in the time tended to reduce the incentive for that. There was tons of incentive to be entertaining in season one because, basically, unless you won, the only compensation you're going to get was airtime. And so, it really favored people like yourself, for example, who are not only just smart, strong performers, but also great personalities. And I think that in this case, if you really wanted to win, your personality was kind of irrelevant. You just needed to go through as quickly as possible.
But again, the time that Ava is going from tower to tower is dead air. And so the production advice to fill that dead air with demonstrations of who you are became more and more evident as the season went on. And it was clearly entertaining seeing people's body language, seeing people's, talking to Ava, talking to the person in the chair, talking to Rob. The different approaches to that, I think, added to the enjoyment and entertainment of the show.
And it really kind of reached its apex with the combination of Laith doing various voice impressions during the runs, and then Anya and her extreme level of activity. I mean, those were probably the single most active, on the entertainment side that I saw, certainly exceeding anything we saw in season one.
Now, there's one other point that I didn't make about Carolyn. Did you notice that she had carefully selected a lipstick shade that exactly matched her blouse?
I did
She
see
was going
that.
full on Vogue there. And I think it's certainly a beauty choice, but I think it also was a power and intimidation choice.
I think it's absolutely right. And let's not forget, even though Caroline doesn't have a bunch of IMDb credits to her name, she is a baton twirler, which means she's used to performing for thousands of people in the audience and certainly understands how to convey emotion to an audience, whether it is in a stadium or over the television wires.
Exactly correct.
Now, the other thing that we talked about during the course of the show is just the fact that we had a number of repeat mental samurai, people who were able to come back. There were two
Right.
repeat samurai this season. So, of course, up front, Catman, whose name is, I think was Steven, but I'll always remember him as Catman as a result of this.
Right.
Probably had the
He survived three shows.
exactly. That was the single longest run. He also won the single largest amount of money of any of the competitors.
Because he's the only person who got the whole 100,000.
Yeah. So again, one of the things coming into the show was, hey, you could win $1 million, but nobody even came close. Only one person managed to get through the full 100,000. I have to admit, this is the one area in which season one was easier than season two, because to get the $100,000 in season one, you simply had to answer four questions right in the Circle of Samurai, which is a lot easier than 10.
But you first had to get through 12. The 13th question was when you started getting the money.
That's true.
Yes.
So, but that was definitely a difference. I think that our other repeat samurai, of course, was Nick Santo, who was a phenomenal competitor, but psyched himself out on the Circle of Samurai each time. So he won a small fraction of the amount of money that that Catman did.
Yeah, and the second time he was in the Circle of Samurai, he was visibly nervous. You could see that first early failure really got to him.
And as we've discussed, because of the shooting schedule, there's just not a lot of time to process. There's not a lot of time to do anything different other than just go back in, get loaded in, and hope for the best.
Exactly. I will one other thing I mentioned that doesn't involve the contestants. This version of Ava was clearly programmed with some new moves. When you and I were in the chair, it was back and forth, some 30, 60-degree turns, but that was about it, and maybe some boomerangs. But this Ava had take you upside down, completely back up and over the top, and that got a lot of people's eyes widened, and it was fun to watch. Again, in my particular case, it's just come on, just get over it. Don't take my time, Ava. Get me to the next tower.
Yeah, and I definitely noticed the up and over move, and I was like, wow, thank goodness we didn't have that during our season. I would not have enjoyed that myself.
Well, and I've taken plenty of rides in Huey helicopters when I was a flight surgeon, so. To me, that no big deal.
See, that's the key, right? You had that experience, which meant that you were not bothered at all by Ava, and that meant that you were able to really just concentrate on delivering a great performance.
If I had delivered a great performance, then yes, I would have said that.
You
But
had
you're very
delivered
kind.
a great performance, Dr. Ken. You're always very modest about this, but you delivered a great performance. As we discussed, the strongest players, including champions from this season, like Caroline, it just takes one hole in order to keep you from coming through.
Yep, that's right. And I certainly hope that we see a season three. It was very enjoyable to watch all season long.
I hope so as well. I mean, it's difficult to say. I will say that unfortunately for Mental Samurai, they doubled up and managed to get it done before the Olympics, but they did go up against the NBA Finals, the last game of the NBA Finals. And
Right.
that meant that unfortunately, this season finale, I think, was the lowest rated episode of the season, because again, you've got an NBA Finals game going on directly against it.
Yep, and I'm sure they were aware of what was going on, and the NBA Finals was aware that they didn't want to come into the Olympics. So, what are you going to do?
No, absolutely. So we'll see. Again, it's hard to say. I certainly hope that they bring the show back for a third season, not just because I hold out hope that they might want some experienced color commenters or that they might want to bring some former competitors back on the show. But as you put it, just because it's been enjoyable to watch the show during these past 2 years.
Absolutely. Yeah, if we have season three, I fully hope that you and I'll be having these conversations once again.
Absolutely, Dr. Ken, you can count on it. Well, thank you once again for taking time out of your busy game designing schedule. We were talking before we went on the air about the number of game design projects you have. One last time for this season, Where do people find you? Where can they find out more about you?
The best way to get hold of me is through Twitter and Instagram as Ken Plays the number two and grin. Ken Plays to grin, because most people play to win. I play to grin. And how about for you, Mr. Yeh?
Well, as always, you should look at chrisyeh.com, where you can find links to my various social media presences, find out more about me and all the other things I do. Surprisingly enough, commenting on game shows is only a tiny portion of the Chris Yeh empire, but certainly you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Facebook and many other places. And Ken, for the last time of this season, thank you again for coming on. It has been such an honor and a pleasure to be here with you.
The honor goes both ways, and maybe someday, if I, you know, if I live another 60 years, maybe I can have an empire. But I admire yours.
Thank you, Ken, and thank you everyone for listening. Dr. Ken and I hope, fingers crossed, we'll be returning for Mental Samurai Season 3. And before then, look for some special episodes where we'll cook up some kind of interesting way for us to still comment and spend time together. Thank you so much. And don't forget, add this podcast to your listen list on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Speaker, and wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.